Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 28, 2017. South Sudan recalls 7 of its ambassadors to return home.
Each and every ambassador has to stay outside for a certain period of time and come back to the headquarters to come and serve here. And other person from the headquarters goes out also to go and do service to the country outside. So any ambassador that you are hearing is coming back. He's coming back because their terms has just finished outside.
And legal experts say the judges' strike is affecting businesses in Juba.
If we had closed these cases, we would have gotten our fees. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten our fees. So we are affected. We don't have money in our pockets. And our clients who would have desired remedies for their breaches of their contracts and any other rights are also being held in limbo because the courts are not functional.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan is recalling its ambassadors from 7 countries, including the United Kingdom, Sudan, and Uganda, to return to Juba. South Sudan's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Deng Alor, gave a 60-day notice to the 7 ambassadors to report to Juba. The country's economic crisis has affected diplomats in South Sudan's embassies around the world, most of whom have not been paid salaries for 6 months. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
The spokesperson for South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs confirmed that his government is recalling some of its envoys back to Juba. Mawien Makol Arik denies the decision is connected to the ongoing economic crisis or delays in paying rent or salaries of foreign service employees.
It's a normal process of recalling of ambassadors that have finished the term outside. Each and every ambassador has to stay outside for a certain period of time and come back to the headquarters to come and serve here. And other person from the headquarters goes out also to go and do service to the country outside. So any ambassador that you are hearing is coming back. He's coming back because their terms has just finished outside.
Arik says, in addition to United Kingdom, Sudan and Uganda, the heads of missions in Germany, India, Eritrea and Egypt are also expected to report to Juba in August after working for 3 to 4 years outside the country. He admits that the economic crisis has affected the operations of South Sudan's 29 embassies during the past 6 months this year. In late March, Arik confirmed that landlords of some of South Sudan's embassies, including London, were given an ultimatum to pay rent arrears or be evicted. A diplomat at South Sudan's embassy in London told South Sudan in Focus that the embassy has moved to a new building and rents for June, July and August were paid in advance. Arik says the government has paid rent for some of the embassies but is yet to pay for several others. He did not specify which embassies delayed paying its rent.
At the moment you see difficulties here in the country, also you expect to have difficulties with the embassies because it is a budget that comes out from the overall budget of the country. And that's why some of the embassies, most of our embassies for the last 6 to 5 months have been difficulties of getting salaries on time. But the government is working to make sure that now this thing is streamlined and the salaries be paid on time.
Arik says the government is looking for ways to pay the salaries of diplomats and rent for the embassy's premises.
South Sudan is a new country and we are eager to engage ourselves with a lot of countries. We should not limit ourselves to these 29 embassies. But all this depends on how good we are going in terms of our budget. If we improved, then we will expect to go more embassies than 29, and this will come at a time when our economy has improved.
The outgoing South Sudanese ambassador to Sudan, Mayan Dudwal, confirms he is among the diplomats being recalled to Juba. Speaking by phone from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, Wall says he believes it is time for another person to take over his role in Khartoum.
It is just a normal routine of the ministry, a normal routine. Nothing, I don't have any reaction because this is a normal routine. Your time finished, you can be called back to headquarters, you can even be deployed to other areas. So it is just a normal regulations of the ministry.
When asked about the delays in payment of salaries, Wall says he understands the economic crisis facing South Sudan in general and declined to comment further. South Sudanese diplomats in Washington were last paid 1 month's salary in April this year after staying for 4 months without salaries. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Legal experts in Juba say the ongoing strike by the country's judges has led to a backlog of cases and overcrowded detention facilities in the country. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudanese courts have not been functioning for the past 3 months since judges and justices have laid down their tools demanding a salary increment. The judges are also demanding the removal of Chief Justice Chan Rech Madut, who they accused of failing to manage the judiciary. Independent lawyers say since the judges went on strike, they have not been able to earn any money because there are no clients to represent in courts. Ajo Noel Julius, managing partner for Ajo and Company Advocate, says the strike is not a good news to his business.
So it has affected us. If he had closed these cases, we would have gotten our fees. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten our fees. So we are affected. We don't have money in our pockets. And our clients who would have desired remedies for their breaches of their contracts and any other rights are also being held in limbo because the courts are not functional. Until the stalemate is resolved, we will still continue to have this situation.
He says, rather than go on strike, the judges should have first advocated for a change in the law and reforms in the judiciary.
Unfortunately, nobody thinks about that. Everything people want to do is to go to the office of the president, the office of the president. That doesn't make sense because the president does not have any right to deal with these issues of the judiciary because he has to deal with the issues of the executive. And that is how the structure is, you know. So we're still in a mess.
John Adewilson works for Justice Advocates. He says the closing of the courts in South Sudan has discouraged the potential investors who would like to open up businesses in the country.
If the system is working well, then they can come and invest their money in the country. But if the court system, for example, is not working well or the legal system is not working well, that means investors can be afraid to come to invest in this country.
Wilson says South Sudan's judiciary system is crucial for the administration of justice. He says the judges' decision to lay down their tools tarnishes the image of the government.
The image of the country to the outside world is also damaged because in all countries, the courts are working or are expected to work. But in South Sudan, unfortunately, this is not the case.
Modi Ezekiel Eresto works with Lex South Sudan Advocates. He says the government should appoint temporary judges and justices to look into urgent cases in the courts. Ezekiel says pending cases, including capital offenses and other criminal cases, should be resolved by the temporary judges to avoid a backlog.
I beg the judges to at least appoint maybe one or two of their colleagues in each court to handle urgent matters. Issues to do with bail. There are certain urgent cases like execution because, take for example, something to do with the death penalty.
The spokesperson for the striking judges, Gary Raimondo, confirmed the strike is ongoing but declined to comment. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where Sudan says it has fulfilled its part of the deal to fight terrorism and hopes President Donald Trump's reinstated travel ban will not affect the lifting of the remaining U.S. sanctions on Sudan. In January this year, before he left office, President Barack Obama gave Sudan 180 days to improve its human rights record and resolve its political and military conflicts before the U.S. could lift economic sanctions. The deadline is next month. Sudan's Information Minister, Ahmed Bilal, says his country has fulfilled its part of the agreement, including cooperating with the U.S. on fighting terrorism.
In fact, everybody knows that we have done everything we agreed upon, starting from the 6 months ago after cessation of fire and fighting the terrorism, and there is no actually the Lord, you know, army is not in Sudan, and everything actually agreed about, we have done it very well. But some people in the administration, in the CIA, they said this already. So We are waiting for the American side to fulfill their agreement with us.
So your government says that it was a deal made between you and the United States, that if you met your side of the deal, then the United States will come through by lifting the sanctions. Is that correct?
Exactly. And we have done everything in the deal.
You know that the purpose of the travel ban is to fight terrorism. Your country is on that list. Do you think it's fair for your country to be on the list?
Of course, especially in this side of fighting the terrorism, the administration, the intelligence, everybody knows that what Sudan has done is greater than any country else. About the information, about the cooperation in this field, we have done it actually very well. This is because our convention, we are quite satisfied what we have done this because we are against terrorism.
As you know, the sanctions were imposed on your country because your country was considered a sponsor of terrorism. Are you saying your country does not sponsor terrorism?
Mr. James, absolutely, we are not sponsoring any sort of terrorism. Actually, in our country, there is no one here. We have actually give the American side all the information we know, and they are very valuable information. And the cooperation in this field, the CIA people, they know this. We are very cooperative. So I don't think there is anything left for us to say about. So we are waiting, actually, for the American side just to fulfill their word and to lift the sanctions.
That's Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with James Batty from the capital, Khartoum, earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the concept of social responsibility and what it means to residents of Ketire Payam in Imatong State.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what was the last thing you did to make someone feel special?
On my behalf, I scored a goal for my team, and that goal gave my team a triumph in that a wonderful victory. It was so wonderful because it was a 0-0 and I turned it to be a 1-0. So it gave my team to be special to win that match.
Well, saying funny things to make them laugh and then letting them know that Jesus loves them anyways.
Being a hotel manager, the things I do that make people feel special are many, but I think the last thing I really did to make someone feel special was leaving out an important phone call and attending to them and really giving them the best.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. In February, residents of Ketire Payam in Imatong State ordered an Indian logging company, Tekna Limited, to stop felling trees in the area for reportedly failing to honor an agreement. A new company called Lukiza Limited struck a deal with the community and is building two health centers and a school. Residents of Ketire Payam say this is exactly what they expect a company to do before logging teak trees in the area. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
The Ketire Forest Reserve, located about 50 kilometers south of Torit, boasts 100 hectares of both natural forest and an artificial forest covered with teak and mahogany trees, many of which were first planted by British colonialists in the 1940s. In addition to accusing former logging company Tekna of failing to fulfill any of the community prerequisites in an agreement reached with state government officials and the Ketire community, residents also say the company cut down trees without replanting them. Ketire resident Kamau Lomera says he is glad this time around the community is working with a company that stands behind its word.
They actually help the community. They start making some, according to the agreement that they made with the community, they actually implement some of the things. For example, they actually started building the PGCC. Then they also finished the bridge. Then they actually also established a nursery bed. of which maybe by the end of this month they will go and start. Of course, they have to start clearing the field so that they go and transplant the seeds.
Lomera says the community has waited far too long for its demands to be met.
Of course, we know this is the forest of the government. So for us, we only wanted the person. The person could be in the form of a building, could be in the form of cash money. Then even they would offer some scholarship to the student within the community.
To reach resident Santina Kide says most families cannot afford to send their children to school. Speaking in Arabic, Kide says the new logging company should also build a secondary school so that when their children complete primary education, they can continue into high school. What is defeating us so much is that we have children and we are just peasant farmers, Kide says. She says even if their sons complete primary school, they may be unable to enroll them in secondary schools so they can complete their studies. Wilson Ambola, Lukisa Limited's operations manager, says his company is making sure that Ketire community benefits from the forest.
Community, as per the agreement, they have 10% of every money that we pay that goes to the community for implementation of their own activities. This money is collected per cubic meter of every forest stick that is exported. Secondly, we have a community social fund which was established, a one-time fund of $150,000, which is made available to the community so that they can do their immediate projects. And that's from that fund is so far where we have done the bridge, we have done the primary healthcare facility, and next forward we are going to the school.
Ambola says another benefit to the community is employment. He says his company expects to employ hundreds of youths to work in the forest industry who will also plant new trees.
We have recruited 90% of our staff is from the local area of operation. So there is immediate effect in terms of job creation and employment opportunities for the locals. We have also a few expatriates who are foreigners who've come to train on machine use, and we have attached the locals to this separate machine so that within time they will be able to catch up and run the operations.
In January this year, wildfires destroyed hundreds of logs and burned part of the Ketire Forest Reserve and destroyed government logging machines. Geria County Commissioner Dominic Onyo says the community and their company must enact safety measures to avoid future tree loss.
The destruction that had happened here, it was not just destroyed by people who are really, you know, friends of this country. This is actually against the development of this country, and we are really condemning such act.
Imatong State Governor Tobiolo Alberio Oromo ordered unauthorized forest loggers to vacate the Ketire Forest, but no fines were paid by illegal loggers. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move back to Washington, where a D.C. reporter has set out to help people in South Sudan through a foundation she established on her own to feed the hungry, educate people, and help the less fortunate. Carol Van Damme has her story in this three-part series.
Goats for the Old Goats is a nonprofit founded by Ellen Ratner. She's a talk show host and reporter for TMN, or Talk Media News, but she's also someone who has made many trips to South Sudan and has fallen in love with the country and its people. Ratner uses the nonprofit to raise money to fight hunger, provide education to children, and to set up medical resources in South Sudan. And she does it all directly, person to person. The way she does it is by making friends with people who can help with her mission, like the governor of Awil.
Awil is, there's a great new governor there, and he is very active. He appointed a friend of mine to be the finance minister who's trying to get business investment. Wow, what a thought, business investment in South Sudan, other than oil, and trying to make manufacturing, clothing, etc., which would be great in South Sudan.
Ratner says Ronald Roy Deng, the former governor of Awil, was working to improve the lives of ordinary residents.
I have a very close relationship with the governor, and I'm very impressed with what he is doing with Awil.
In late May, South Sudan President Salva Kiir fired Awil Governor Ronald Roy Deng, replacing him with Yornu Wol Kwat, who was apparently handpicked by the president. The president's decree did not mention why the governor was removed, but he is a close ally of former Army Chief of Staff General Paul Molong Awan, who was also fired by the president. Ratner chooses to stay away from the politics of South Sudan. She began Goats for the Old Goat while preparing for her 60th birthday. Ratner comes from a family in which birthdays are a big deal, but she did not want presents to mark that occasion. Instead, she asked her friends and colleagues to contribute to the Goats Project so that South Sudanese citizens would be able to eat and their children would not continue the cycle of malnutrition. While Ratner purposely does not get involved with discussions about what caused the conflict in South Sudan or who is responsible, she cannot deny that parts of the country remain dangerous. Many roads are closed due to insecurity. So how does an American travel the country and stay safe? Ratner, who just returned from her last trip to South Sudan in February, says she manages just fine.
Everybody says, don't go to South Sudan. And I say, hey, there's parts of Chicago I don't go to. So I think it's automatically, you have to know where you're going. Where I go is totally safe, and Awil, which is quote-unquote up in the bush, is very prosperous.
Ratner says people outside the country have the mistaken impression that everywhere is a war zone inside South Sudan. She says she would not travel to Awil and other places to help the people of South Sudan if that were the case. Goats for the Old Goat also funds something called GEMS, which stands for Goats, Education, Medicine, and Sustainability. It not only helps feed South Sudanese families by donating goats that provide milk and cheese to hungry families, but it pays for training South Sudanese medical students who in turn train other medical staff to help those dealing with the emotional trauma of those who have watched their villages burned or family members killed right in front of their eyes. GEMS also helps thousands of South Sudanese affected by polio. Ratner says the Development Foundation provides a unique type of wheelchair that's customized for the rough terrain of South Sudan.
What we do is we buy bicycles, and the polio survivors make their own wheelchairs. We bought them a soldering machine and all that. They make their own wheelchairs because they're able to go on the lack of pavement on the ground, and they're hand done, and our polio people are great. We need to give 15 more wheelchairs to complete the list in a wheel town, and then probably another 150 for the former Northern by the Gazelle. So we have still a lot of wheelchairs to get.
Ratner proudly notes that GEMS gave away its 10,000th wheelchair this past February. Join us tomorrow when Ratner talks about why she keeps going back to South Sudan and how she knows her foundation is working. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Kenya is said to be the first African country to introduce better HIV treatment for people living with the disease that causes AIDS. In partnership with the Kenyan government, UNAID and the World Health Organization have introduced a generic first-line drug for people living with HIV. The drug has fewer side effects and patients are less likely to develop resistance. Lenny Rovaga has more for VOA from Nairobi.
Speaking at a news conference in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, Dr. Peter Kimu, the head of the health policy and planning at the Ministry of Health, said this new first-line drug, known as dolutegravir or DTG, has few side effects and patients living with HIV are less likely to develop resistance.
DTG offers better tolerability, fewer adverse drug reactions, fewer drug-to-drug interactions, and higher genetic barrier to resistance.
One of the key partners in the initiative is UNITAID, a global health initiative working to end tuberculosis, malaria, and HIV/AIDS epidemic. UNITAID donated approximately 148,000 bottles of DTG to Kenya's health ministry, which will cover about 1% of the patients living with HIV in the country. Robert Matiru, the director of operations at Unitaid, told VOA the economic and health benefits of the new line of treatment will go a long way in ensuring key populations get much-needed treatment.
When you bring a better product that is cheaper to make, and that is of higher efficacy, meaning better treatment outcomes, of course you're going to realize savings. And savings are so critical in this day and age because, as we know, funding is constrained and in some cases declining.
According to Kenya's health ministry, about 1.5 million people are living with HIV. The introduction of the new generic first-line drug will be an added arsenal in the fight against the scourge. Speaking to VOA at the launch of the new drug, Dr. Martin C. Rengel, the head of the National AIDS and STI Control Program, or NASCOP, was upbeat about the new line of treatment. However, he says challenges still exist.
We have a challenge in the sense that DTG is not available commercially to the scale that we can start everyone on it. It's a new drug, so the manufacturing is yet to catch up. That's why we're starting small. Number two, we have moved the treatment from where we used to combine different pills to make a regimen into what we call a fixed-dose combination pill, which is basically a tablet containing three drugs. DTG is a single drug, so we have to formulate the regimen with other two drugs.
Doti Ogutu, the executive director at African Sex Workers Alliance, an organization that addresses human and health rights violations against sex workers, has been living with HIV for the last 15 years. Ogutu has been on dolutegravir for 3 months. She says the difference between this new line of treatment compared to the old one is the diminished side effects that go along with taking the medication.
The side effects are significantly less. I haven't experienced any side effects using it, so I think that's just my experience. But, you know, with treatment, it differs from patient to patient. But what I can attest to is that the side effects of this one, if I compare with the side effects I had with the favirans, whereby I had a loss of weight, loss of appetite, I became severely anemic, and that became basically my condition. I haven't been able to experience that with this new drug. So I think it's a plus that we are now changing to medication that's being used in developed countries.
However, Ogutu, whose organization African Sex Workers Alliance has membership in 30 African countries, argues that more focus should be shifted to adherence.
There's a challenge, and even for those who are living with HIV, adherence, sticking to the drugs and finishing your drugs. There's a lot more that still needs to be done around providing psychosocial support for people who are living with HIV. And I think we are losing it in all this conversation around prevention. And I think it should be a slogan in this year's World AIDS Day. People living with HIV, lives matter.
According to the World Health Organization, more than 18 million people globally were receiving antiretroviral treatment. Dolutegravir is set to be introduced in two other early adopter countries, Nigeria and Uganda. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
That report by Lenny Ruvaga brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Fi Sabab by Ras Corby.
Fi Sabab, the cool haji al behasil fi dunya. Fakun pala, matestaji. I'm original rascal day.
Free sabab.
Last me confit sabab, yeah.
Free sabab.
Last me confit sabab. Oh.
Free sabab.
Last me confit sabab, yeah.
Free sabab.
Last me confit sabab, oh.
Free sabab.
Para puna kalaku tunia, yeah.
Free sabab.
Para jibi so ujumara, yeah.
Free sabab.
Pal woman pira pa ya head, yeah.
Free sabab.
Pa chamit wa gambra vitala, yeah.
Free sabab.
Last me confit sabab, yeah.
في سبب
لازم يكون في سبب
في سبب
لازم يكون في سبب
في سبب
لازم يكون في سبب.
We have been listening to Russ Corby with the song Fi Sabab. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Fi Sabab.